All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Thank you for joining the session today. To start the session, I want to give you some great news. So it turns out that we thought that 10 tips was good, but we could do better. So we're actually going to give you 20 tips today, 20 tips to build great apps. So double the fun.
Wait, before you go, who are you?
Yeah, I'm advancing. Sorry about that. So my name is Rolando Jimenez, and I'm a program manager on the Office team. And I'm here with E-Ray, which is on the SharePoint team. And we're going to talk about today about things that you need to consider when you build your app. So we expect to give you like great insights into the things that you want to think about when you're thinking about doing an app for Office or an app for SharePoint. Now, I want to ask you a favor. We have these 20 tips, and Ira and I have a little bet on which one is the best. So as we go through the tips, we're going to be calling out the numbers. And I'd like you to think about the number that you like, the best tip of the session. And then at the end of the session, we'd like to know which tip was your favorite. So please keep the number of the best tip of the session in mind so that we can check which one's the winner. So let's get started. So I'm going to set the context by showing this diagram. And I want to ask you, how many of you went to the overview sessions, either the intro or the what's new for developer sessions? Okay, half of the room. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time giving some context about this particular session. And I want us to use this diagram for that. So this diagram is the diagram that we use to explain the new common architecture that we have behind the app model. So as you know, in 2013, we are making big investments to modernize the development platform, standardizing on the web, and bringing Office and SharePoint closer together. And the way we're doing that is through this common architecture that allows you to create apps using the same technologies across Office and SharePoint, and apps that integrate client-side logic or server-side logic or both. And in the diagram, you can see the different layers. I'm not going to go into many details here, but the key points are we have hosting environments, both on the server or on the client, that allows us to isolate those apps and have a very rich execution environment, all based on web standards. So on the client, we have a web browser that executes all your HTML JavaScript code. And on the server, you can host your code on any web server that you want, including Azure, on-premises, or any other platform like Linux or the LAMP stack. One of the big investments that we're doing is in the client APIs and the server APIs. So that you will see that we have a lot of new APIs that you can use to interact with Office clients, with SharePoint from the client side, as well as on the service side, use REST or the CSOM object models to interact with SharePoint. And then, of course, we have great tooling to let you create these apps. And surrounding the apps, you probably want to also integrate with other app platforms. Like you may want to bring some Windows 8 goodness, some Windows Phone integration. And that is all possible because the services API allow you to integrate additional clients. And on the right-hand side, you can see that there are also like a lot of third-party services that you can integrate. And we're going to talk about that in this session. Now, one of the key points of this diagram is, in the past, it's always been a decision to basically for the developer around whether I make an app for Office or an app for SharePoint. And before I had to decide, because I needed to learn different technologies. If I wanted to do Office, I needed to do like VBA or BSTO and program against the Office client object models. If I wanted to do SharePoint, I needed to learn web parts and very many SharePoint-specific technologies. With this new model, the goal is it should no longer be an either-or. It should be an and. You guys should be able to very easily create applications that integrate both Office and SharePoint, and more with Office 365. Basically, Office 365 is an environment that customers will get provision with Office and SharePoint and Link and Exchange, so you have all the full suite of products, and we want to make sure that with the new platform, you have all the power to leverage the suite across the board. So we expect to see much more interesting solutions that actually go the full spectrum of Office and SharePoint. And we expect that in this session, you will get a little bit of that. So with that, we're going to dive right into our 20 tips for this session. And we're going to start with a section on coding tips.
Thanks, Rolando. And just to kind of set everyone's expectations for today, we're going to be covering a lot of really kind of various areas. So there might not be some common narrative through. It's more just a set of things that we picked up while working on the app platform and while we've been building out stuff. And also just based on questions we've had in the past and, you know, trying to answer some of those. So we'll be demoing after most of the tips, not every single one of them. And, you know, definitely if there's things that you want us to go deeper in, feel free just to ask about it. Okay.
And since we're a small audience, I think we can take questions. If there's anything that is not very clear, feel free to raise your hand. Yeah.
Okay. Can I actually grab the clicker?
Definitely.
Thanks. It makes me feel powerful. Okay. So, tip number one is going to be reuse JavaScript libraries. Okay. So, a lot of when we looked at this new platform, it was to go and take a big bet on web standards and to expose all of our APIs via JavaScript, things that are, I guess, consumable easily via JavaScript. And so a lot of what we kind of started to see when we were building out our own apps was like, wow, Rolando would go and build out this really cool demo, and then I'd ask him, how long did it take him? And he'd say, I spent, I don't know, 2 hours this afternoon. And I'd be like, crap, that was really nice. And what's your secret, Rolando? He'd be like, I use such and such JavaScript library. So it's a really great way just to kind of get your feet wet and do some cool things. And I'm going to show kind of an example of one is just for the SharePoint data case, what are some of the types of things that you'll need to do to get ready to use that JavaScript? And then two, show an example of it actually being applied. Three. Okay, that's a little distracting. Okay. So what you're looking at here is a really simple app that goes and fetches data from the host web. I can go back to the host web briefly just to show you. So I have my site over here, and then within that site, I have a bunch of lists and other apps. So on. And then what this demo is going to show is how I can go and use that data and easily fetch it via JavaScript, show it in the rendering here, and then how you can then later on use a JavaScript library to render it in a far more fancy way. So just to give you a little bit of a sense of what I have here, I have a couple of different options on the left just to go and say how much data do I want to go and fetch. I have a simple experience around picking lists from the parent web. So I have the sales data that I pre-populated over there. And then I can also specify, you know, which kind of data do I want to show. I have a couple different pieces of information there. Okay, so you're like, wow, that's just a little tiny, tiny grid of information on a screen. It's not that cool. But let me go and show how this is actually accomplished. Okay. So I think a bunch of people actually attended some of the sessions yesterday. And so just to refresh folks' mind, we have a bunch of different API surfaces within SharePoint. We have a JavaScript object model, among other things. The JavaScript object model is probably most likely to be used when you're using a SharePoint-only application because you can't have server-side code in those cases. So what I have going on here is a pretty simple page that just has a bunch of just the pieces of markup around the select boxes, as well as a place to go and show that information. All the heavy lifting is happening behind the scenes in this JavaScript file, and I guess that lifting is not even all that heavy. So just to walk through, the basic steps that this goes through is to first off create the context and then figure out what the host URL is. And so we've seen this pattern a bunch of different times that whenever you launch into an app, there's a set of tokens that get passed along the query string. And then within the app webs, you can go and use JavaScript to go and fetch that parameter and then go and instantiate the correct context. From there, you're just using normal JSON to go and get the lists, load, and then execute them. And then from there, I just go ahead and go and actually put those in each of the options in the dropdown. And that basic process kind of continues on. I then go and do a similar thing with the fields. Oops, I should make this a touch bigger, sorry. Okay, I do a similar thing with the fields next. And I go and, you know, again, getting all the fields for it so that you can go and do those dropdowns. And then finally, at the very end, I go and select all the items. And so this is still going through. And I go and select the items. And then I eventually go and create arrays that go and represent that data. So that's what I'm doing down over here, in which I go and put that all that information in a simple JavaScript array. So it goes as easily accessible via various libraries. Because most of things, visualization libraries, expect that sort of a format. Okay, and so that's basically all I did for that first part. Now I'm going to go and show a case in which I've actually wired this up to a JavaScript charting library. So I have my second project over here, and then I have that same apps.js file. And so basically this is where I finished up creating that array. And then I have this function over here around rendering a chart. And, you know, this is something that you can go and do with just about any old, that you can go and use with any old JavaScript library. So you can see in the project, I just have a bunch of different plugins that I've gone and added to this particular solution. And then over here, it's a pretty simple experience around just mapping, you know, what the various settings are, down here, and then plotting that out. So you have these different settings of what kind of chart you want, where's your data, and so on, and then what the actual thing that you're going to replace. And so, you know, you can go and use any old JavaScript library of your choice. It's pretty easy to go and wire those things up. And then, but in the end, you get a much fancier presentation of that information. So let me go back and show that. So I showed you the simple get data version of it, and now I'll show you the charted version. Okay.
So with reuse and without reuse, right?
Yep. Okay. And so now I have this app that goes and does the same basic experience before, except for now I'm going to go and use a much fancier rendering in which I can go and say, pick that sort of a sales data that I had, and I can pick different kinds of charts, be it I want a pie chart, or if I want like a bubble chart, if I want a, you know, a donut chart. This one's actually kind of cool. And all of this, I guess, flashiness that you're seeing here is all just based off of, you know, publicly available JavaScript libraries. There's tons and tons of them out there. And so, you know, just definitely just go do a search for them. And you can go and start playing around with that and using that with SharePoint data and kind of just really kind of make your apps come alive. I want to do two more just because they animate somewhat gratuitously, which I was like, always great for a demo. Okay. So that was the first tip.
And that's a great one because, I mean, you can see how one of the points of the model is that since it's web standards, you can actually tap on all the work that all the web developers around the world have been done already. So you can actually reuse a lot for your own projects. And there's really tons and tons of libraries out there.
What's that? Yeah. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it was all dynamically generated, all with JavaScript libraries that do the rendering at runtime. Okay, I'm going to do the next two tips together. This isn't going to be a demo tip. It's more about just kind of emphasizing this sort of a message in which, you know, one of the things that we've been seeing a lot is that a lot of people have existing websites or web applications, or they have existing services. And, you know, you can go and follow this general pattern of if you have this website or web service, you're like, okay, well, how do I go and expand that reach? Can I go and, do I want to expose it on mobile devices? Do I want to expose it on, you know, various app platforms, things like that? And so we definitely encourage anyone who's has a service that they're looking to expand to consider the Office and SharePoint platform as well, because it is kind of very simple and easy to go and do that. The basic case is just you have an app manifest that you go point to your site, and then you can slowly think about what are the next types of additions you do. So for example, one thing that we saw a ton was if you have a mobile view of your site, that's often a great first step to building an app because it kind of has a similar sort of form factor. And so that's one thing that I definitely kind of recommend. And then start to think about, okay, are there high value services in SharePoint? Like, do you want to integrate with social, any SharePoint data? And that's kind of a good way to go. And the second thing is we're going to continue to be emphasizing, we've exposed our APIs with a lot of standards. So, you know, we also encourage you just to use whatever you're comfortable with, just to keep that learning barrier pretty low. Okay, you almost ready? Okay, and so with that, I'm going to give it to tip number four with Rolando.
All right, so tip number four is going back to the point of it's not no longer SharePoint or Office, it should be SharePoint and Office. And I want to show you that with the new model, since it's all web, HTML, JavaScript, you can actually reuse a lot of code across the two worlds. So I want to show you just a very simple example of how that can be done. So probably you have seen this demo before, but for those that haven't seen it, this is a set of apps for Office that we created back in the summer when the Olympics were going to basically let people track the medal counts in Excel. So on the right-hand side, sorry, on the left-hand side, you have a task pane app that it's connecting to a service. So it was connecting to a live service. Right now it's no longer live, but it was giving you real-time medal counts and giving you some summaries. It also allowed you to import your data into the Excel spreadsheet. Now, on the left-hand side, you had a couple of other apps that allow you to visualize that data. So the same way E-Ray reused some of the charting libraries, here I'm reusing a lot of the libraries that are already on the web to create a very nice visualization for these apps. And these apps were put together so that, I mean, they are interactive, so I can get more details about the different countries, and I can see the different sports, where they're winning medals, and I can even see that on a map, on a third app that I have there. So we spent quite a bit of time creating this demo, but it was actually pretty fast from an overall perspective. We actually built the whole thing in 2 weeks. So it was some code, but we reused a lot. Now, we wanted to reuse that code and also offer a similar experience for our intranet through SharePoint. So we decided, hey, why don't we go ahead and create an app part in SharePoint that gives me the medal counts so that I can track the medal counts on my my site or my team site? And that's exactly what we did. So let me show you how that looks like. So here I have a team site where I have installed a SharePoint app that you can see looks and feels very much like the task pane that we have in the Excel client, and that's because it's 90-95% code reuse across the two projects. All I did was I grabbed that task pane instead of in a task pane, I put that code inside an app part and then packaged it as an app for SharePoint, and boom, all of a sudden I already have an app part. So it was really easy to do that code reuse across both platforms. And this is something that we expect you guys to also take advantage of, because there are some scenarios that make sense to surface information in both the Office clients as well as in SharePoint. And then just reusing the same code that you already created for one, it's very easy because it's all web services, HTML and JavaScript running on both sides. So that's my tip number four. Now we're going to go into another topic out of coding, into cross-domain data access. So this is a space that is very important for people creating apps, because normally the power of apps is not necessarily that you do a lot of JavaScript code, but that you also connect to data sources that are offered by third parties or by other developers within your company, right? So you may want to connect that CRM information or LOB system, and it's other developers and other people that are exposing those data sources. And in many cases, you need to access those data sources across domains. Now, this is a challenge specifically in the web, because there is this cross-domain policy restriction that the browser imposes that doesn't allow you to access data sources across domains. So how many of you are familiar with this challenge with the same origin policy? Okay, so quite a bit of people. For those that are not familiar, basically it's a simple security feature that browsers implement that basically if you load a page from a particular domain, let's say mydomain.com, that page will not be able to access data or connect to other third-party.com domains. The browser will restrict that with an access denied. And that's because basically the browser platform doesn't want to leak information across domains. But in many cases, it is useful to access data provided by third parties. So this is a common challenge, and there are many techniques out there on the web that you can use. And I want to talk about some of those so that you can apply them when you're building your apps for Office and apps for SharePoint. So the first one is you can use JSONP to do cross-domain client calls from within your JavaScript client side. Let me show you a quick demo of how that is done. So I'm going to jump to another project here in Visual Studio. In this case, I built a very simple task pane app for Office. But imagine this could be also another type of app for Office or an app for SharePoint. The same concept applies. In this case, I want to basically translate the selection in a Word document. So let me run this app, and the code is very simple, to show you what it does. So I'm going to press F5, and here I have Excel. So what this app allows me to do is basically I can have any data in Spanish, so I speak Spanish, and then click any of these buttons, and it's going to translate this data. In order to translate it, I'm going to connect to the Bing Translator API, which happens to be on a different domain. I'm hosting this app right now in my local host because I'm debugging, but in production environment, I will host it in my own domain, which is not the Bing Translator domain. But I need to call the Bing Translator API, and that's a cross-domain call. How do I go about making that call without facing the browser limitation? So one of the ways is to use a JSONP technique. I'm going to show you a couple of ways in which you can do that. So I click that button, and I'm on the function that handles the click event. And the first thing that I'm doing here is just very simple, clearing the element where I'm going to put the result of the translation. And I want to show you that I'm going to start using the Office JavaScript API that allows me to get access to the selection. So I'm going to get the current selection, which is the cell that is selected, and this is an async call. So it's going to execute and come back on this callback function with the result of that. So I'm going to press F5 and hit this other breakpoint where I have the value of the cell, right? Very simple stuff. So nothing very fancy so far. Now, the trick here is to make the call to bingtranslator.com without facing the cross-domain browser limitation. So the way to do that is because Bing Translator support this JSONP protocol, which is basically, in basic terms, when I call Bing Translator, instead of returning the data that I need, it's going to return me the code that needs to be executed on the client side to get access to the data. And this works because the browser allows you to load code across domains. That is not restricted. What is restricted is accessing data across domain. But you can create a script tag on your HTML page to load a JavaScript library from a different domain. That is allowed. And that is a technique that we're using here. So basically what I'm going to do is dynamically generate a new script tag and point the source of that script tag to the Bing Translator domain. And since I'm calling that API via the JSONP protocol, it's going to return me a piece of code that is going to be automatically executed because I'm generating a JavaScript tag dynamically. So let's see how that's done. Basically, here is a create element. I'm creating dynamically a new script element. And I'm setting its source to the results of this API call. And you can see here, I'm calling Microsoft Translator. Here's where I'm specifying the function that needs to be executed on the client side. This is the JSONP aspect of it. I'm providing my developer app ID so that I can use the API, and I'm providing the text that I want to translate. So very simple. I'm going to hit F5, and that's going to basically add that element to the page and load the script. And let me click it again. I think I took too long. Oops. So I append, return, let it run. For some reason, my callback's not being executed. Let me try another way. Where's that? Let's see. Okay, so something's not working right now on this project. The result should be that I get the translator on my callback. For some reason, I think maybe it's some network problem. Let me try again. Okay, let's put again some work here. Translate. Okay, there we go. So now I'm getting the callback that it's basically going to handle the result. And you can see I'm getting the translated text in this callback, which is basically the callback that I told the Bing Translator API to call. This is the name of the function. And I declare that function client-side. And that function is going to receive the data. So that way, I can get a very easy translation through the Bing Translator API. Now, you can do this. This is basically a way to do it without using any libraries. jQuery also supports this pattern. So if I click on the jQuery approach, it's very similar. I'm going to clear the result. And in this case, you can see I'm using jQuery, the AJAX call, to provide the information about the URL and the parameters with the app ID and the text I want to translate. And it's going to be the same approach. It returns the result in my callback. So just to summarize, JSONP is a good way, and you can use it, because when you create apps or Office or apps or SharePoint, you're basically building on top of web standards. So anything you can do on the web, you can do on top of this platform as well. Now, the next one is this technique works for certain cases, but there may be other cases where this may not be ideal. So, for example, as you saw in this case, I had the developer key that I used to access the API on my JavaScript. And that's not good because that means that's in clear text. Everyone can see this information, and I have no control about that. So I may want to do a different approach to access this cross-domain and protect that secret. So the next tip is when you have a situation where you have something to protect, either your IP or some secret like a developer key or user credentials, you may want to do the cross-domain calls through a server-side logic. And this is another of the benefits of the model. You can mix and match client-side and server-side logic to do this type of stuff. So let me show you the exact same demo. But instead of doing it client-side, instead of connecting cross-domain on the client-side, I'm going to request the translation from the server-side. So let me show you how that works. So in this case, let me type another word. And I'm going to say translate with proxy. So translate with proxy, instead of doing the call from the client-side directly to Bing Translator, is going to call a page, basically an ASP.NET page on my own domain, which is allowed. And then that page on the server side is going to make the call, because on the server side, there's no cross-domain restriction. So let's see how that works. So I'm going to just step into this. Again, I get the data from the document. This is the word hola. And as you can see, I'm doing a JSON, but in this case, I'm doing a JSON call to just translate ASPX page, which is part of my project. And if I hit F5, I'm going to hit that code. Now, this is executing on the server side. So you can see now this is a C-sharp code executing on the server side. And I'm going to make the call from the server here. You can see now the secret is not exposed on the client. It's only on the server, which is not accessible to anyone. And then on the server side, I get the results of the translated text and basically send it back to the client. The client receives the data on the same callback and then displays the result. So another way in which you can do cross-domain data access and at the same time protecting secrets or IP.
Okay, and so, you know, Rolando showed a couple easy ways that we see a lot on the web, but here over on SharePoint, if you're actually going to build out content on SharePoint or build out an app for SharePoint, we've made it even easier for you to do this. So both from an outbound call as or an inbound call into SharePoint, we make it super easy by providing you a library to do so, and then, can you pass me the clicker?
Oh.
Thanks. Sorry. And then also in... There it goes. Yeah, and also in the outbound case. Because basically, whenever you're going to be building out an app, it's always about you either want to get access to SharePoint data or you're hosted in SharePoint and you want to get access to some external service. And so we saw both of those patterns a lot. You know, we got kind of tired of writing all those libraries ourselves, so we decided to go and kind of wrap that up and actually release it. And so I'll just go and show you those two cases now, in which the first one in which you can go and make the inbound call, and then the second one in which you're doing the outbound call. Okay, so I'll show you first what it looks like. Okay, so the first one is basically that same sort of cross-domain pattern in which I'm gonna have a web server that's gonna make an inbound call on a SharePoint. So that's what I have as this app over here. And it's pretty straightforward. It's just going to go and fetch some data about an announcements list. And then you'll notice that it's hosted elsewhere, but it's all happening client side. And to go and show you the actual code. Okay. And so the way this app works is the HTML side of it, and you're going to see pretty simple HTML all the time, that it's always just about referencing a couple of the libraries that we use throughout SharePoint. And then, again, we go and put a lot of the code over here. So that first step that we saw in the previous example, you have to go and get the actual context and get your host URL, your app URLs, and things like that. And over here, what we're doing is constructing the link to that actual library. And so what this does create a requirement that you always have to have an app web for any of the apps that use this. So if you're going to have your own web server and you want to go and just make client-side calls into SharePoint, you still have to have a user install an app somewhere just to go and give them the right permissions. Okay. But the next part of it about it is once you have made the reference to that library, you can go and create this request executor. And all this does is it helps basically handles a lot of what Rolando was showing behind the scenes as a library. And so you can just go ahead and make your calls to any of the apps that you want or to any of the REST endpoints in this case or use the JavaScript object model as well and just use this library and go and get that data. So we've encapsulated a lot of that complexity for you, and so it's pretty straightforward to use that. And so that's the inbound case. I'll go and next show you the outbound case in which I'm going to go and fetch data from an external service.
So in this case, you have SharePoint logic that is trying to retrieve data from a third-party service?
That's correct. Yeah. And so I'm a big baseball fan, and I decided to get an RSS feed from a baseball site. Let me see. No, I don't have it. Oops, I guess I have to redeploy it. Okay. So to show you how to do the outbound case, once again, we've created some libraries and some easy functions to go and do this. What this particular app does is it's going to go and fetch data from a remote URL, a remote service, and then return that and render it. And so just to show you what that code looks like, it's pretty straightforward. We have this, you can go ahead and say, create this web request object, and we have a feature called the web proxy. And so what this will do is it goes and makes that call on your behalf, and so and thus getting past the same origin policy. And so you can specify any old URL, and it's, again, it's pretty straightforward to go and use this to make any sort of outbound call you want. And then after you get that response, you can go ahead and render it however you please, like as a set of list items, for example.
So in the example I showed, I actually had to build my own C# logic on the server side to connect to the third-party service. So in this case, the server side logic is provided to me, right?
Yep.
Okay. So let's go to write.
So just trying to make everyone's lives easier. Okay. And so hopefully that gives you some different ideas and options for how you do cross-domain data access, which, like Rolando was saying, is super common in these sorts of web patterns, especially if you're doing a lot of client-side code. Okay. So now there's going to be a bunch of tips that we kind of bundled all under this banner of hosting. Some of them might not really be hosting per se. Some of them are a little bit more deployment related. But I think you'll find some of these to be pretty cool and hopefully helpful. So who here attended my session yesterday? A handful of people. I had a demo that didn't work yesterday. And so I've managed to figure out a way to go and work it into this talk, because I thought it was a pretty cool demo. And so I'm going to start with that one. And that's basically leveraging auto-hosting in your app for SharePoint. You've probably heard a lot about auto-hosting so far and how that helps you with the multi-tenancy thing. One of the other benefits here, though, be it auto-hosted or provider-hosted, is that it allows you to go and actually have your own endpoint and then go and connect to a bunch of devices. So a lot of devices today, like phones and whatnot, all have this notion of a push notification, which you go and write to a channel or a service, and then that'll pop up with some message on the phone. So let me go and show you how to do that in a second.
Are people in general familiar with the auto-hosted concept? Yes? Okay, raise hands if you're not. Okay, so it seems
at the connect behind the scenes while that's going. Okay, so let me go and show you some of that code. Okay. Okay, so what I have here is a simple remote event receiver. So a remote event receiver is much like a normal event receiver, except for that rather than calling code that lives on the server, it goes and calls an external service. And so in this case, I've created a service that will go in and actually go and send notifications to Win8 devices. So basically, anytime I have a simple announcements list in this app here, and then anytime that anyone adds an announcement, it'll go and send out notifications. So I'll talk a little bit about what that code looks like over here. Basically, whenever that event fires, I go and check, okay, well, I created a new item, let me go get the title and the body of that item, and I'm going to then format that into what the Win8 notification format is, which is this little blob here for toast. There is a thing called a channel, which is how you go and actually make a call to a particular device. And then the main method I call is this thing called post to the Windows Notification Service. And this is just code that you can go and literally copy and paste from MSDN. So let me go and show that now. And hopefully this will work this time, and I'll be really sad and embarrassed if it doesn't. Okay. So I have my simple announcements list, and I can go ahead and create that new announcement, and I'll say, please work, please. Okay, and I'll hit yes, and I should get a notification right away in Windows 8. And that kind of just shows you how, you know, with that external server that I have sitting there, I can go and ping out to any sort of device, and then, you know, that's kind of a nice way to go and look at, like, if I'm hosting elsewhere, I get that sort of connectivity. I can build apps for Office, apps for phones, and so on. I'm going to try one other thing that I think is kind of fun, just to give you...
Correct. In this case, the question is if you need to have Office 365. For the auto-hosted feature, yes, you need to have this on Office 365 so that the code is running actually on Azure so that it can actually send the notifications to any device across the internet.
And so you can see it actually goes pretty quick. And so we have this new grid editing thing, and so they're all kind of firing all off. And so it's kind of just a cool thing that you can go and do whenever you have that external server and with that remote event receiver infrastructure to call out these services. So that was the demo that didn't work yesterday, but thankfully it worked today. And so let me go back to the slides. Okay.
So my tip is like a me too kind of tip. So auto-hosted works for apps for Office too. So I want to show you how you can integrate an app for Office and still leverage the auto-hosted capabilities of SharePoint. So the way this is going to work is you basically create a simple app for Office, but simple or complex, whatever you need the app for Office to do. You're going to package that app for Office inside a SharePoint.app package. Deploy it to SharePoint, and SharePoint is going to automatically deploy that app for Office to Azure. Now, that Azure location that it's deployed, it's not yours, it's the customer's. So that has the advantage that you don't need to worry about maintaining or hosting that code. It is on the customer tenancy that it's being run. So let me show you how that works. Close this one. And I'm going to start a new project. And I'm going to select, as I told you, the trick here is you're going to create a .app package for a SharePoint app. And you're going to put your app for Office inside there so that when it's deployed to SharePoint, the app for Office also gets deployed to Azure. So let's do that. So let's call it Office App Auto-Hosted. And this is going to create a SharePoint project. I'm going to select the auto-hosted feature and say finish. And it's going to create a standard SharePoint app project template. But what I'm going to do, as I told you, is add an app for Office to it so that I can deploy the app for Office using the auto-hosted infrastructure. And so it's very simple. I just click here and say add new item. And Visual Studio is going to give me the option to add a new app for Office. And I'm going to say this is my auto-hosted app and add it. I'm going to say, yeah, I want a task pane. And Visual Studio is even automatically going to create a document in the package for me so that I can actually test or use that document as a template. So when that is done, I could run F5 and debug the project, and it's going to do the normal SharePoint debugging. But one thing I can do here is debug the app for Office that I just added. So I'm going to disable the deployment to SharePoint. I'm going to say do not deploy to SharePoint for now. And I'm going to say the start action instead of SharePoint, I want to start Excel. And that way, I have a SharePoint project, but that has an app for Office that I can debug. So for now, it's going to run locally. You can ignore this problem because we don't need to deploy the app for SharePoint right now because we only care about the app for Office. So we want to continue with the debugging experience. And it's going to show the app that I just created. So this is the blank template that allows you to read and write data to the document. But the point here is that now I have an app for Office inside an app, a SharePoint hosted app. And what I can do now is I can publish this. I basically produce the package that represents this app. This is going to generate the .app package here. So now I have my app for Office inside there. All I need to do now is come here to my app catalog in SharePoint and deploy that SharePoint app package. So I'm going to drag and drop that package to my SharePoint app catalog. And we're going to see how that gets done. And as soon as it's...
As a side question, who's here has heard of the app catalog before? A couple of people. I'll spend some time talking about it in a few minutes then.
Okay, basically the app catalog is the central location that you use to deploy apps to end users. So in this case, I'm taking the package that the developer created, put it into the app catalog, that it's basically a SharePoint document library that contains all the apps. And from there, once I have it, I can install that app on this side. So I'm going to say, add this app to SharePoint. And I'm going to say apps from organization. Basically, these are all the apps that I created in my organization. Here's my app auto-hosted. I'm going to install it on this side. Yes, I want to trust this app to be installed on this side. And SharePoint, right now, that's where the magic is happening. So as SharePoint is deploying this app on this side, all the code that I wanted to be auto-hosted is being deployed right now to Azure. So it's going to take a few seconds, hopefully not many, and the code is going to be deployed to Azure. So now my app for Office is going to run from the Azure infrastructure. And also, because I included the app for Office there, the app for Office is going to be automatically deployed to my SharePoint catalog. So the next time I go to Excel, I'm going to see that app there, because my Excel is connected or configured to that SharePoint catalog where I'm installing this app. So let's give it a couple more seconds. It's taking its time. There you go. Okay, so now you can see this is the new app that I just created. And if I go to my Apps for Office catalog, you can see that that app just got deployed there as well. Where it is. Oh, it's not in there. But once that it's done, the next thing I want to show you is that app is now running on Azure. So if I come here to unlaunch it, you can see now this app is being hosted on Azure. So that happened automatically for me. It's not the same domain as my SharePoint site. And I can also access that from the client. I actually think I missed one thing here, that my app didn't get deployed. One attribute that I missed when I created this package was that I need to specify that my app for Office needs to be deployed to the app catalog. So that's this attribute here. So what I'm seeing right now is that the app for Office didn't get deployed to that app catalog because I didn't change this attribute. So I could republish this app and do the same process, but to save time, I'm not going to do that. The point is you can use app auto-hosted capabilities to deploy apps for Office too. And the next tip, I'm just going to talk about it, but it's very similar. The same way I created an auto-hosted app for SharePoint that includes an app for Office and be able to host my app for Office along with that, I can do the exact same thing with a SharePoint-hosted app. Now, in that case, I can only do client-side code, but also I'm not needing to create an Azure instance and incurring any related cost that may have. So, and the process is very similar. I go to Visual Studio, create a new SharePoint app. In that case, I select a SharePoint-hosted app instead of auto-hosted, and it's going to deploy my app for Office as part of that.
Okay, and so here's where I'm going to talk a little bit more about the app catalog and then also show kind of a neat trick that is supported within apps, but it's something that's not something that we always really kind of highlight in our main talk. So it's almost like a thing that you should go and consider with part of your design. How many people have ever been asked, like, hey, can I go and deploy this thing like everywhere in a tenancy or everywhere in a deployment? Have something pop up like all over the place. And it's, you know, if you've done it today, you know, you can do some stuff like that with full trust, but it's actually not super easy. But we've tried to go and start making that sort of pattern of deploy to this set of scopes or deploy to this site template type a lot easier. And I'll show you how to do that. So first off, I have a very simple app here, which is just a SharePoint hosted app, and I have kind of two things. Basically, I have a custom action. So this is going to go and add a menu command to list, and specifically every single doclib. And it just says, click me everywhere, and it'll go take me to the home page of that app. And then secondly, just have a very, very simple, it's the default home page of that particular app. So I've already gone and packaged this thing up, and I've put it into the app catalog. And so, like Rolando was saying, the app catalog is a feature that is what kind of the admin, the tenant admin or the IT admins of an organization will use to help control and distribute the apps that go to their users. So basically, it's a kind of a special document library that you go and put apps in. So you can see I have a set of different apps over here. And then, if I were an end user and I said add an app, you know, I would go and see any of the apps that are in that catalog, so over the from your organization category. So that's basically how, you know, how admins go and distribute apps. But the app catalog is also used for this other capability because it's almost like this central point in which the admin goes and makes decisions about what the user should use. So if an admin goes ahead and actually installs an app into that particular site, because it's just a site, and I'm going to go do that right now. So I'm going to add an app. I'll add that all around the world. That's what I called my tenant deployed app. I will trust it. And so once that app completes its installation process, the tenant admin can go and decide, you know what, I really want to get that same app like everywhere. And so what they have this option of is specifying the deployment scope of that particular app. There's some limitations to it in the current iteration, but something that we're going to continue to invest in. So today, what it'll allow you to do is, so you see this I Am Everywhere app. I'm going to say deployment. It has some, but as I was saying, it has some limitations to it today about you can't do every single thing that you can do in an app yet. The main ones that it can do are things like add a command to just about every single menu of any type. It can go and show up on that all apps page for every single site that you pick. And then you can also go and use either an app web like you do and kind of host shared resources there across all of those spaces, as well as do a provider hosted model. So just showing you this UI, you could specify everything in this managed path. And then I'm going to say for team sites, or I'll go dev sites and team sites. Okay. And click OK. And I'll say, yep, I'm going to go and spray this thing everywhere. And now if I go over to a team site, actually, let me go to one here. I should be able to see that that app is installed. And sometimes it takes a few seconds for it to show up. But now it's basically in every single site. And then, as I noted, that when you go and install it, it still goes back to that shared location that's hosted there. And let me just show you one other piece. If I have any documents, it'll show up in there as well. So I have a random document over here, and I can go and click and see what the commands are, and I have that click me everywhere command. So that's just an easy way for you to go and make sure that if you're building out an app for SharePoint, and you can go and recommend, hey, to get this thing everywhere, use this tenant deployment thing. And you can also think about it just from how you want your app to be used from that pattern.
All right, so we're going to go into a few tips around hosting. One of the key requirements for the new platform is around security. So SSL is a hard requirement. So whenever you create an app, you host it in a web server, it needs to be hosted in SSL. And SSL sometimes may be tricky. So the tip here is use Azure websites. Azure websites is a very easy way to get an SSL-enabled hosting location that you can use for development or for production, and it's really, really easy to get it going. So how many of you have already subscribed for a free account on Azure and created Azure websites? Okay, so a few. So let me show you a quick demo of how easy it is to do that for people that haven't done it. So I'm going to come here, and this is basically the Azure portal. So you subscribe for a free account. It takes just a couple of minutes, and then you get a dashboard experience where you can start adding new sites. And basically, you come here, say, I want a new site, new website, do quick create. You just assign a name here, say create, and you're done. So I, as you can see, I already created a few websites, and I have these Rolando J demo that I have created. And what I want to show you is how easy it is, once I have my Azure website, is to set up an SSL connection and publishing to that website. So in this case, I can come here to this configuration, which is download publish profile. And this download publish profile allows me to save a file that will auto-configure Visual Studio with publish settings that I need to publish to that site. So I downloaded it to my desktop, and I can go now to Visual Studio, to any project, like, for example, just this translator that we created, and I can come here and say, I want to publish this to Azure, and I'm going to import that profile that I just downloaded to my desktop, which is here. That's going to come up with all the information I need. I can say, I want the destination to be on SSL, and that is going to deploy my app right to that Azure location. So it's that easy, and it's already SSL enabled. So I don't need to do anything additional to enable the SSL. So very easy to comply with the requirements of the platform around security. And then related to this tip is, since we require SSL across the board to make sure that everything is secure, make sure that all the connections that you establish are secure as well. So we've seen that it's pretty common that you are connecting to a data source from the client side, and if that connection is not on SSL, then you're going to run into some challenges. So let me show you how that works. So I'm going to come to Excel and insert the same version of the Metal Tracker app that we saw at the beginning. But in this case, I'm trying to establish a non-SSL connection. So the browser, in this case, is going to block that connection, and I won't be able to retrieve my data. So the point here is make sure that all the connections that you make from the client side are on SSL. Otherwise, the framework will prevent you from running your code. Now let's switch gears into authentication. So authentication is a common theme that I get a lot of questions about. And one of the questions is, how if I want to connect to some data source that requires authentication and I need to request permissions? And the answer, the simple answer is, it's easy. It's just the web. Use all the protocols that you will use on the web. And OAuth is one of the most popular protocols. And I want to show you a very simple example of how easy it is to integrate OAuth into Apps for Office and Apps for SharePoint. So in this case, I'm coming to a Word document, and I'm going to show you this Facebook integration app, which allows me to read anything in my document and post it to SharePoint. Now, the moment I insert the app into my Word document and try to connect to Facebook, Facebook realizes, hey, this app doesn't have permission to talk to this SharePoint account. So I'm going through the OAuth flow that SharePoint supports, and I'm going to say, yeah, I want to install that app Up for Office and register on Facebook. Facebook is telling me it's going to post on my behalf and access my newsfeed. I'm going to say allow. This is all happening on Facebook. Whoops. And let me try again.
And one of the kind of cool things about this pattern in particular, again, it's if you have that server that you have, you can go and ping a lot of different services together. And I think that blend of the consumer services and a lot of like the information that's, say, like in SharePoint is a pretty powerful combination for when you're doing your work.
All right. For some reason, right now, it doesn't let me do it. So I will keep going. Yeah. So the next one is about the same thing about using OAuth can happen against SharePoint. So I'm going to show you another example of a SharePoint app that an app for Office that uses the OAuth to connect. In this case, it's hosted on Azure and it's going to connect to SharePoint using OAuth for authentication. So I'm going to come here and open a document. Let me see. Actually, let's do this one.
And this is just going to be a pretty light taste on OAuth. If you are very interested in authentication and all things are, and if you're really going to be building any apps, you probably should be. I think there's actually two really good talks that unfortunately are scheduled at the same time, I think during the next hour, but I would go and highly recommend seeing Rob Howard talk about authentication. He was the one who kind of did the whole authentication stack for our app model, and he's been doing this talk a lot, and he's a great speaker, so that's, I think, right after this session. I'm not sure what room it's in, but I would highly recommend that for super deep, any question you possibly have about app authentication, he should be able to answer it.
All right. So what I'm going to show you here is an app for Office that is hosted on Azure, so in a different domain, that wants to talk to a SharePoint site. So in this case, I want to create a list based on the table in this Word document in this particular site. So I'm going to provide the URL of that site, and SharePoint is going to authenticate and require me permissions to do that. So as I click connect here, you can see this is the OAuth flow that SharePoint supports that is basically telling me there is an app that is trying to do something with this site. Do you trust it? And I'm going to say, yes, I do. I trust that app. And then as soon as I establish the trust, the app receives the required tokens, and it's now connected to the site. From this point on, the app can now connect and do read-write stuff to SharePoint, which is the set of permissions that I requested. And in this case, I'm going to assign a list name, and I'm going to say, hey, create a list based on this table that I selected in my Word document. So the app is going to read that information, connect to SharePoint using the trust that I established with the OAuth, and I can access the new list that I just created. So you can see how in a couple of clicks and by establishing trust between the app and SharePoint, I can actually start doing a lot of very cool integration between Office documents and SharePoint sites.
Yeah, and I think that the key about that pattern, though, was that there wasn't an app installed in SharePoint first. It's just that there is a random web page out there on the internet that you can go to that goes and then makes a request for your particular SharePoint site. And then once you grant it trust, you can go then talk to it. So it's a really good pattern to go get some more viral adoption of your app. Okay, I was gonna go in, we only have about 5 minutes left. So I was gonna talk a little bit about leveraging SharePoint license capabilities in your apps, but I think I will skip that demo for now. The key aspect of it is that we have an API. So when everyone here builds apps for the store, because I know every single person here will, you're going to go and have to go and implement license checks within your app. So we provide services within SharePoint for any app that was purchased by the store to go and determine what the current licensing state is. And then you can go and verify that against another web service that's the actual Office and SharePoint store web service. And so that combination can make you feel comfortable about, yes, for this particular user, you know, they're either in a trialed state, a paid state, or an expired state, whatever that is. And then from there, you can go and decide what the correct behavior within your app should be. And so it's just like another CSOM call, so it's pretty easy for you to make. It's supposed to be a CSOM REST. You know, we have the consistency across our APIs. Okay.
And the next tip, number 18, is about delivering your apps to your end users. So you probably have seen a few demos. We showed the metal tracker demo today, which I can just flash again here. And the idea here is that not only end users can acquire apps from those catalogs, but there is a very nice viral adoption for apps for Office that you can get through documents. So you can actually produce a document that it's nice looking. I mean, you do some nice design and you connect it with some data in Excel or Word, and it already does some functionality out of the box. You can actually deploy your app just by distributing that document. You distribute that document by email, or you post it into a shared location, and then people can get the apps just by opening that document automatically. So that is another very easy way in which you can reach your end users.
Okay, so the next one is, again, you'll probably hear me say this in every single session, and I love apps that use the social APIs. So this is just another, I'm going to show two demos that talk about the social cases and kind of interesting things about them. So the first one I'm going to show is that if you see some of the other kind of more overview sessions, you may have seen this app, is that we've built out this Kudos app internally around, and that way I can go and say, yep, here's my site, and I can go and give Kudos, and people can see what Kudos I have. And the interesting thing here is that, you know, if I go and visit the profile page of someone on my team, I don't want to see my Kudos here. I want to see the Kudos that she has received or has, the way we go and accomplish this in this pattern is we have the post message system. And so over in here, much like the same way we do the web part resizing, we make it possible for you to, we'll emit on the page the user whose profile it currently is. And then that way you can go and actually fetch that information and go and design parts and apps that kind of make sense for a profile page. And so basically, oops, it's a little bit down further here. But, you know, we'll go and actually release the code on a blog post or something so you can go into it a little bit deeper. The other thing I was going to show, too, is that, you know, putting apps can go and write to the feed, and they can do actually a pretty rich set of things. And so this actually combines a little bit of what you saw with Rolando around, you know, a random page writing to SharePoint, and then some of the cool stuff in the feed. So here I just have ESPN, and I'm going to go, and I have this server running that can go ahead and post to the feed. So I'm going to go and click on this link, and this goes and launches to that my local server, and I'm just going to say, look at this demo, and I'll post it. And so behind the scenes, you know, that app has been granted access to my SharePoint server, and it's going to go ahead and get info. Let's see when that finishes, and then post that I've liked this particular article. So if I go back to my newsfeed and I click over here, I now see that that article has just been posted up. And so the couple of things that are cool here is that, you know, your app that's writing to that feed can now go and show up in the company news feed. So to kind of give people more awareness of stuff, it's also attributed to that particular app. The app is called SP Connect. And you can do some pretty rich things because it is that external server. You can go and do things like fetch images and do what other processing and then all stuff that back into the feed itself. And so just to show you the code briefly, you know, the feed API is pretty straightforward. You just go and create the feed manager, and then you can create the posting type itself. And so here's just some of the information that you have to go and say around what the title is, what you link out to, and any of the additional content, such as like the image in this case. SharePoint will automatically always attribute it to the app if an app is writing to the feed, so that way you don't have to worry about like all those weird spoofing kind of attacks. But that's kind of a basic example of, you know, why it's fun and cool and good to integrate with social and as well as the MySite stuff. Okay.
Very nice. And last but not least, just a quick tip of things that you can do on top of the framework just because you're building on top of the web. So I want to show you a very quick trick. you can do in Apps for Office to enable more sophisticated scenarios. So in this case, we don't have a built-in infrastructure for app-to-app communication in the framework, but since you're building on the web, you can either use the web itself to do the communication, or you can actually use the documents to communicate apps with each other. So in this case, I have a couple of apps. There's a task pane app that allows me to configure a chart, and there's a chart app. So what I want to show you is that these two apps can provide a user experience that basically feels like the two apps are integrated to each other. So I can do things like theme. I can change the colors. I can change the types of visualization, for example, area or pie. Oh, it's not applying it. Particular, but I can change the title, chart, and come here and apply. So the point here is even though the framework doesn't provide direct app-to-app communication, because these two apps are built on top of the web, I can use things like HTML local storage or cookies to communicate information between these two apps. In this particular case, since the two apps are on the same domain, they can actually share information through cookies or through local storage. In other scenarios, you may also want to use the document to put information and read it from the other app, and then enable these scenarios where an app does something and the other app reacts to that action and enable a more sophisticated scenario for the end user. And this can be applied also in the case of SharePoint. If you have two app parts that are coming from the same domain, you can also do the same technique that you could use on the web. So the point again is it's built on web standards, and you can use a lot of the same tips and tricks that you would use for a regular web application. So with that, we want to wrap up. So question here? Sorry? In this case, I'm using cookies, so it's a polling thing. One app is listening for a cookie to be changed. There is no particular eventing. I think with that, we're going to wrap up. Irene, not sure if you have any other last words.
Thanks for coming. Hopefully you picked up some good ideas around, hey, some of the things that you can do or got inspired to use some of these tools and techniques for when you're building your apps. I'm always going to plug, hey, build apps for the App Store. And if you fill out one of those cards, like folks like myself and Rolando are doing one-on-one sessions with people for the rest of the week, because I think we put this... Yeah. We both have a session next, but after that, we'll be basically just meeting with folks.
So fill in your cards and get a free session. Yeah, and if you want to tell us which one was your favorite tip, please shout. Any?
Five?
One?
Eight.
Eight? Oh, there was all over the place. Any more? Want to share? Okay, five, one, and eight. Thank you.
Great,
all right, thank you very much.
That's a truthful.